Good morning, everyone. Today's interview is epic. It's one of redemption after life in prison, insane drive and vision, and also one that you will want a notepad nearby because he dives several times into the foundational steps to building a huge real estate business. A little warning, if you're listening in the car with your sweet little ones on the way to school, there is a little language, but a ton of nuggets, so you will not want to miss 1 minute of this thing. If you have not yet, please like and subscribe, and don't forget to share this podcast with a friend so you can be up to date on all of our episodes, including our weekly deep dive into the DFW real estate market that comes out each Friday. And don't forget to look back at some of our past episodes where we walk step-by-step through flipping a house and also interview some other great personalities in our world of real estate. There you have it. Now just sit back and enjoy our interview with Eric Crutchfield.
So I just looked around, saw some self-development books. I was like, hey, I'll probably need that. Picked out this book called Awaken the Giant by Tony Robbins. The book changed my life. And so I ended up building 3 duplexes, so 6 units. In total, I think I made like $500,000 plus on that deal, those 6 units. So that was my first foray into new construction.
You are now listening to the Real Estate Heavyweights Podcast.
You see this guy here staring back at you? That's your toughest opponent. Every time you get into the ring, that's who you're going against. I believe that in boxing, and I do believe that in life.
Your weekly deep dive into DFW real estate, life, and beyond. With your hosts, Tavis Westbrook and Ashton Hines.
Well, good morning, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Real Estate Heavyweights Podcast. It's an interview edition, and today we've got an awesome guest. He is a local guy here in the DFW area. He's absolutely killing it in the real world and also on social media. If you follow him at all, he makes me in my editing look just absolutely basic. He's doing a great job. I know Tavis and I, you know, keep close tabs on everything Eric's doing. But a lot of it is based in the fact that he's putting out a really, really quality product, some really cool houses. But we really want to welcome in today Eric Crutchfield. How are you doing, Eric?
Good. Thanks for having me, everybody.
Definitely. I'm sure you got some people that are going to be listening in that you know, they're your people that are following you. But I'm Ashton Hines. I'm a newbie. I flipped 4 houses. I have a long-term hold. And I'm kind of new to the game. I'm a real estate agent. I help investors. So I'm learning the ropes. The guy that I'm learning from mostly is my friend here, Tavis Westbrook. He's flipped over 200. He got a small commercial building. He's got some midterm rentals, some long-term rentals. And he's just been in the game a long time. And so he's been helping me out. And so on the podcast, we basically go back and forth. We're learning the basics of different parts of investing. We went through flipping. We've done, you know, we talked about note investing today. We've talked to people in the short-term game. And today, I'm really excited to learn from Eric on the new builds because Tavis will tell you, I've mentioned multiple times, I would love to do this at some point, do some sort of infill work. But before we get started, why don't you take everybody through, Eric? I know you've got quite a story. You've got a lot of life lessons that you learned early on. So why don't you get everybody caught up on kind of your story and what got you here today?
All right. My name's Eric Crutchfield. Been in building, flipping for about 5 years. I started as a flipper, morphed into a builder, building multi-million-dollar homes. That's basically all that I do now. Had in the pipeline about $40 million plus homes that I've been finishing up, working on my last like 6 or 7. Probably those will be on the market maybe in 2 to 3 weeks. So prior to that, I was in prison for 7+ years for a manslaughter charge. Changed my life in prison, got out and got into real estate and hit the ground running. Here I am, turned myself into a multimillionaire. I own almost 90 rental homes and just build new construction homes now.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's break this down because you just said a lot. Okay. So let's take it like this. So I knew your story. You were in prison. So what was your path before prison? What were you doing? What was your career? Were you in real estate at all? What did your day look like?
I was not in real estate. I was a pretty wild person growing up. I was lost, you know. I graduated high school, barely. I tried college, went to 1 semester of like community college in Tulsa, Oklahoma. That's where I'm from. I made three F's and a D. I was like, this is not for me. So then I didn't know what to do. I went and got my EMT. I was going to be a fireman. And then I just met the wrong people, started selling drugs, and started making money that way. And basically, I just did that for a long time. I was a personal trainer for a little while. But yeah, between selling drugs and personal training and being lost, partying, doing stupid stuff like that, got myself into prison.
Yeah.
How old were you then, Eric?
I caught a manslaughter charge. I caught a few charges on the way, but my manslaughter charge, I was 27.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I know, looking at your Instagram stuff, I looked back, you know, some of your pictures. In prison, you have or maybe it was after prison, you took a picture of the bag and you had a bunch of books in there. And I think the caption was something like, if you know, you know. And I was always curious. So while you're in prison, you went in there with that, you know, that lifestyle, that mindset. What clicked? Did you meet someone specific? How does it change in the middle of prison to where you go in with that mindset, you come out with, running like crazy into the real estate world? Did you read something specific? Did someone have a conversation with you? Like, how did that happen in there?
Okay. So I can tell you two books that changed my life that I read in prison. Both the books are from Tony Robbins. We were actually on lockdown at one of the penitentiaries I was at. We were on lockdown. We couldn't move. All they let us do is go to the library to get books. I don't know why, but so, you know, I was lost going into prison. So I was still lost, but I've always been a hustler. I've always made money. Even before I went to prison, I made, you know, a lot of money. So I've always had the cool cars and the rims and all the brand new stuff. So I was always a hustler. So even though I got locked up in the penitentiary, I was still criminally minded. I was still thinking of ways to make money when I got out illegally when I was in there.
Yeah.
So we're on lockdown. I'm locked up maybe 2 years at this point. I'm still thinking criminally. We're locked down. I go to the library. I'm like, fuck, I don't even read. I fucking hate reading. I was like, I don't know. So I just looked around, saw some self-development books. I was like, hey, I'll probably need that. Picked out this book called Awaken the Giant by Tony Robbins. The book changed my life. I read it from front to back. Unbelievable. We're locked down, so we can't do anything. So I basically just read like nonstop. And it has a bunch of like workbooks and workout things that you need to do. And, you know, I don't have shit to do. So I did everything. I'm just, you know, whatever. What are your future goals? What is this? What is that? What is this? Shit, I'm doing it all. So I just fucking opened my mind up and I'm like, oh, it awakened me, you know?
Yeah, it worked.
It did. Yeah. And I just learned so much more about life and myself. And just like, from that point forward, I was just strictly fucking all on self-development and business. And then, because one of the little worksheets was like, okay, who are the three richest people that you know? So I'm like, okay. So I wrote down the names. Two of them were in real estate. One of them was in oil. I was like, fuck oil. I don't even like oil. I don't know nothing about oil. I don't care about oil. Real estate, I've always, you know, been drawn to. So I was like, all right, this is what we're going to do. I want to do real estate. I don't want to be sitting in a cell ever again in my life. You know, couldn't see my son, family. It was the worst. But anyway. Yeah.
So were there other books in the library that you could get in touch, like to actually start learning some strategies once you kind of knew, hey, this is what I want to do? Could you request certain things, or did you have a plan when you came out exactly, hey, I'm going to go try to find my first flip, or I'm going to find somebody that can help me with rentals or something like that?
So the penitentiary library is pretty shitty. They don't have much of anything. I feel like it's built to keep you down. Mm-hmm. They don't want to share knowledge. You know, I was lucky enough to get these Tony Robbins books. So after I read that one, I read another one called Unlimited Power. So Awaken the Giant and Unlimited Power, two of the books changed my life. So then at that point, you can get books sent in. So that's when I started getting real estate books sent in, you know, business books. I had subscriptions to all the business magazines like Forbes, Fast Company, Inc., Fortune, all that stuff. So I was looking at all that, and I would be dissecting it. Forbes was probably my favorite, but sometimes they would notate like real estate books, and I'd write them down, and I would get them to send in for my family.
Nice.
Or friends, you know, it'd be my birthday or Christmas, like, you know, just send me a book. So I that's all I did basically for the next 5.5 years was just read business books, business magazines, and real estate books. I read flipping books. I read development. I read Donald Trump books. Art of the Deal is one of my favorite books ever. My favorite author to date is Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. It fucking opened my eyes tremendously when it comes to passive income, cash flow, all that type of stuff, assets, liabilities, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, so it's funny because I never read any books in my life until that day in prison.
I mean, that's pretty wild, right? That your first book you get your hands on is, you know, Awaken the Giant, and you know, it awoken you, right? I mean, what an amazing, you know, thing. I mean, and you know, I've heard you reference your faith as well before, you know, but I mean, I would believe it's not by chance, right? I mean, that's the book you got, and you dove in, man. And, you know, one of the things, one of the most common denominators we talk about in any business, regardless if it's real estate or not, just entrepreneurial mindset and just, you know, continued growth and building your business. And, you know, we all get to this road where we're kind of like, okay, I feel like I know this pretty well. Now what? And it's that next step, and it's kind of growing on top of that. So it all comes back to mindset, right? But what an amazing tool that was something that changed your mindset right off the beginning. And, I say 2 years in, I mean, at least, you know, that had to help you through, you know, the next 5.5 years and, continue to soak up all this knowledge and grow and kind of build. So I'll kind of ask you this again, you know, Ashton kind of said, you know, so what was, you know, fast forward 5.5 years later, like, obviously you've been reading these self-help books, you've changed your mindset, you know, you've not only been reading, but you've also been doing these workbooks and writing things down and writing your goals down and staying on top of it. And obviously there's limitations of what you can do when you're locked up, right? But what was your first step? I mean, once you came out, I mean, where did you go? What was that next move that you had in front of you?
So I knew I wanted, my mind was set. I knew I wanted to get in real estate. I read a shitload of books of real estate. Like, I understand commercial real estate basically to a T. I could talk to any big wig about it. Like, you know, I know all the keywords and, you know, terminology and everything. So what I didn't have was the, you know, practical experience. I was like, I get out, I'm like, fuck, how much does tile even cost? How much does labor cost? What the flooring, sheetrock? I don't know prices at all. You know, some of them had like rule of thumbs, you know, especially for some of the flipping books were really good at like the rule of thumbs. You know, if you wanted to, you know, medium flip or high end flip or full gut, you know, but I still was lost. So, you know, I got out and I was just trying to figure out, like, I was on Zillow, you know, when I was gone, the 7 years technology, like, it was way different. Like phone GPS. I was like, fuck, they know where I'm at right now, right here. That's crazy. You know?
So did you get out and go back to Tulsa, or where what ended up?
I paroled to my mom's house in Fort Worth.
Okay. Got it.
But yeah.
So that moved, brought you to DFW.
I moved from Tulsa when I was like 19. So
got it.
I had been in Dallas for already, you know, 7-8 years.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah.
I got locked up at Texas State Prison.
Got it. Okay.
So your first project, I think I've read, was it a flip, or did you pick up something? Did you get a rental the first one? I think it was a flip, right?
So I'm talking to people. Like I said, I got out, you know, just put my fillers out. I'm talking to people. I want to get in real estate. It's what I want to do. One of my best friends gave me a job doing logistics. I had to have a job. I was on parole. You have to have a job. You know, he gave me a job for parole, basically. But I also needed money, so I wanted to work. So I did logistics. I actually ended up making like $85,000-$90,000 that first year doing logistics.
Wow.
And I did real estate on the side, and I'll get to that. So I put my fillers out there, and one of my best friends, I guess while I was gone, got into real estate and had been flipping you know, maybe like 10, 15 homes while I was gone. And he was like really responsive to me as far as like answering all my questions, you know, because a lot of people, they bullshit, you know, they're whatever, whatever, whatever. But I could tell he was like genuinely like he passionate about real estate also. So I was like, hey, man, I want to get into a flip. You know, I borrowed some money from my sister. My sister had some money. I could borrow it. I just need to find the flip. So he kind of held my hand through that first flip. He found the flip for us or for me. And I guess he didn't have the money at the time or something, but he was like, hey, you can buy this one. I've already actually flipped one house down on the same street, like seven houses down. I was like, yeah, let's do it. You know, I just put my faith into it. Like, yeah. Fuck, all right, let's do it. You know, I ran the numbers and he told me what it sold at. He told me what I was buying this one at. I figured out the construction a little bit. And I was like, we can make it work. So ended up buying it. I think it was like 200,000, 220, somewhere around there. And then I put 40 grand into the construction. Ended up selling it for like 320, paid my sister back her money. And then I made like $53,000 to my name. And I had been out of prison maybe 6 months.
Wow.
So, I mean, I was like, shit. Now here we go. You know, yeah. This works.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So then I bought another one. Found another flip. Now I'm kind of hunting myself, finding them. I found a good one. Paid $210 for it. Called my sister back. Hey, can I borrow the money? Again, we're going to do another one. Got it. Paid cash for the land. I was going to flip it. Well, this one needed a lot more work. I was going to put $75,000 into it. And, you know, I don't remember what I was going to sell it for, what the ARV was. But, well, as I'm driving around the neighborhood, I just see all these four-story townhomes going up. The whole neighborhood. I mean, it's MF2 district. They're all over the place. Multifamily, townhome, townhome.
What part of town is it? What part of Dallas is this?
In East Dallas, off Lemon and 75.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there was another builder building three townhomes. You know, these things are four stories, modern, pretty sweet. I own this land right here, and I'm like, fuck. The whole area is, like, so tall. And this is like a little dope house, right? It's just, I could throw 75 into this thing, and it's still going to look like a small dope house.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
So I'm like, fuck. I was like, I got to build. I have to build this. I mean, so long story short, I was basically forced into new construction. So I called my buddy back up, said, hey, come look at this. You think we can build, you know, something like this? He had never built anything in his life. All he did was some flips. But I trusted him. I could tell that he was really detailed. And I, you know, I believe in myself. And he was like, he ran the numbers. I ran the numbers. He was like, man, I think we can do it. He was on the fence for like a month, though. He didn't just say, yeah. He was like, I don't know. But after more and more talking, I mean, I still own it outright. So I'm like, we have to build. I got to do something, you know, or I got to sell it. So I interviewed a lot of builders, and everybody was just trying to make money off of me. Yeah, we'll build it for $220 a square foot. You know, pay us a flat fee of this or whatever, cost plus. And that's not what I wanted, because I'm out of prison. This is my career. I want to learn every fucking thing I can learn about this. So that's why I called my buddy up and I said, look, I own the land. Let's go get a construction loan to build this thing. I'll sign on the note. I'll split it with you 50-50. You just help me build this. He was like, all right, I'm in. So he had brought a hard money lender to me that he had used in his flips. We got all the paperwork drawn up. Everything's good to go. I'm about to go sign. I think we're like a day before I'm supposed to sign. The hard money lender calls him and is like, hey, I can't loan to Eric. He just got out of prison. He has two felonies. I'm like, fuck, are you serious?
Jeez.
You know what I mean? For the construction loan.
Yeah.
And so he was pissed. He was like, oh my God, you're going to run your relationship with my lender. He was not going to lend to me. I can't do any flips. He was so upset and hysterical. And I'm like, it's fine. It's fine. So anyway, I ended up calling a bunch of other hard money guys and like, hey, can you lend to me? We ended up figuring out how to do it. I put it all back in my sister's name and ran it that way. Got the loan, got the construction loan. End up building it. A lot came available right next to me. I actually wrote a letter to the guy that was vacant. I wrote a letter to the guy and said, hey, I just bought this one for $210. I'll buy yours for $200. And I think he got me up to $220. I bought that one. And then later on, the lot next to me came available. A wholesaler grabbed it. I ended up paying that wholesaler $40,000 for more for it. And I got that one. So I ended up building three duplexes, so six units. In total, I think I made like $500,000+ on that deal, those six units. So that was my first foray into new construction. And it started as a flip.
Wow.
Nice.
So, yeah. Once I made that 500, I just dumped it back into another lot and another lot and another lot and another lot. And I just kept building. And that's how I was able to grow.
So I know Tavis is, you know, he has a design background. He does some design work for people. I'm curious, your houses that you post have a modern aesthetic. It's wide open, real clean. Is that what you started with? Is that always what you wanted to do? Is it just kind of that's what the neighborhood was? And so you just kind of started going that way? Or how did you sort of evolve to what you're doing now?
I definitely think that was personal preference. My first townhome, those duplexes were extremely modern. Contemporary modern looking. I've always been drawn to the white stucco. I just like those homes personally. Now, I don't know if those are the best homes to build in Dallas, Texas, because smaller buyer pool. You know, I think they like more of the farmhouse style or traditional.
I was going to say, I mean, that's a tricky part about design. And when you're building new, right, is you have to, especially when you're building spec. And when you're building spec and you're building to your standards, you know, you've got to forward think to know that you're going to attract the clientele in a short amount of time. So I'll back up a second. When you first bought the first lot, you had the lot, you were going to flip it $75K to do a reno. You said, no, I'm going to go ahead and build a duplex at zone MF2 so I can do this duplex on it. So backing into that, obviously you brought your buddy in, but I'm sure that was unknown territory. So what was your budget compared to actual when it cost you to build? And then time frame wise, how long did it take you from, you know, I mean, usually it takes a little while to do your design plans, get your plans in, obviously deal with the city of Dallas. It's worse than what it used to be, but go through that process. And then, you know, how long did it take you to actually build from the time that you, prepped the lot and did your foundation, where did your plumbing, right? So once you got your plumbing in and started going from there, how long did it take you?
Yeah, that's a good question. So like I said, my partner that I brought in, he handled most of that because I'm still fresh out of prison. I don't know much about anything. You know, I flipped that little house, but he held my hand through that one as well. I mean, so he took care of the majority of all the permitting, you know, the building, the scheduling, all of that stuff. He created the budget, you know, for the lenders. You know, I didn't know any of this. Obviously, I'm on all the emails, you know, but I'm just soaking everything up at this point. Like, I don't know much at all. So he was in charge of most of all that, you know. It was basically my money, and then he brought in that expertise. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's why 50-50. But, yeah, it was definitely not a smooth, you know.
Well, and that's why I ask, like, I mean, do you remember what your budget was or what was your projection versus what you spent? Do you remember?
Yeah, this was four and a half years ago. So I don't really remember it. I had to pull it all up, but
yeah,
I think
yeah.
18 to 24 months, which should have been, you know, 9 to 12.
Right.
So it really comes down back then. Permitting in Dallas fucking was not good.
No.
Especially MF2 permitting is like the worst. So I built a 5-unit commercial right behind that one, and that one was fucking hell too. Different codes.
Oh yeah, commercial gets in a whole another nightmare, man. When you start dealing with, you know, health and ADA and all the other, and then your energy efficiency piece, even it's a lot more complex.
We actually talked about you this morning because we were doing our normal Friday podcast. And there's a news story about the city of Dallas is upping a bunch of their fees, their licensing fees and construction fees. And we were wondering, I'm sure you don't now, but were there times when you had to go sit in that Jefferson office down in Dallas? Or do you send someone down there? I did one project and I spent a lot of time down there. So I figure if you're doing multiple, like, you probably know all of them down there.
Yeah. I mean, you got to think, though, I'm not out of prison that long. So, like, I didn't mind anything, you know.
Yeah.
So I'll sit in prison in a cell for 7 years and come out. You're going to be happy to sit anywhere.
Yeah.
You know? I remember my mom would always be driving And she would get so mad at the traffic. I'm like, Mom, who gives a fuck? Like, you can be sitting in a, I can be sitting in a cell. If you're sitting next to me now, like,
right,
in a car together for fucking 7 years.
Yeah.
And I just remember that time. I'm like, you guys got to fucking chill, man. This is awesome out here.
And I haven't done anything in the city of Dallas in a while, but it used to be, you know, like you could get a same day permit if you had all your shit together and you got down there at like 6:15, 6:30 in the morning at the latest and get in line. And you would hope that you would have a plans review or review you by 3 o'clock. I think it's all, is it all online now? It's all,
it's moving, you know, online. I actually haven't bought a new construction home in like a year. I've just been finishing all my,
off what you got.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Like I said, I had that pipeline full of like 40 homes, and I'm just wore out with all that.
Yeah.
You know, it's just me. I don't have superintendents or anything, buddy. So I handle everything.
So when you, going back to like your duplex, when you get into this and you got hard money, obviously it's not cheap. It's usually pretty hefty on the front end, especially, I can't imagine what the new construction is on hard money, but it can't be cheap what they want to see in it, because they've got a lot to lose, right? I mean, you're scraping it, so all they've got is dirt. You know, it's a big risk for any lender, right? When you go into that, especially you don't have the history, you don't have the background. So fortunately, you had your friend that had a little bit of that, but not in new construction.
I wrote off coattails basically the first few. They wouldn't loan to me. So
as far as carrying that note, I mean, were you just, again, off of that flip money that you made, you just put it away? Yeah. And basically that was your reserves for the business. And you're like, okay, I mean, cause you had to float it for 24 months, you said, before you were finished with that, right?
We had to have reserve money in the account. So I owned the land outright and I borrowed some more money. I think we had to have $150,000 in the account for reserves.
Yeah.
So I had to borrow some more money to get that in the account to show that. And then, you know, we got the draws after that, so we could kind of,
right. But then, and then you've got to float in increments, right? So you're floating out 50K at a time, you know, it gets you through, you know, foundation, plumbing, you know, get you to that point. And then you got to take a draw to be able to get sticks up and
So
get your lumber package. Gotcha.
And like I said, I didn't really do too much of it. I'm just there soaking everything up. But I mean, so my partner, he's emailing for the draws.
Yeah.
He's with all that. He's paying the contractors. He's negotiating. I'm just going to get, I'm driving the neighborhood, getting all, you know, framers and plumbers and electrical. I'm getting just tons of names that, because the whole neighborhood was building, right?
Right.
So I'm pull up on site here. I'm walking all the way inside. I'm getting everybody. Oh, you do tile? What's your name? What's your number? Mm-hmm. Okay. Awesome.
Nice.
Next thing you know, hey, I need a bid over here. I was, that's what I did. I did what I could do, you know?
Yeah. So then you go through that part, you had a partner. At what point did you figure out that, like, okay, I'm good, you know, and I don't know, maybe you still have a partner or not, but, you know, from that point on, you're like, okay, I've got this. And now I'm looking for lots, right? Like this, I've got a niche. I feel like I'm confident in this game now. You know, we're building a good product. They're selling, you know, obviously you made it through at this point, you know, you made it through, I don't know when that was, you said 4.5 years ago. So it just, you know, 2019 range, right? Going in, and then COVID hits and you've got your hands in inventory. You've got some new builds. You've got, you know, you got a lot of money out there. I mean,
it got scary there for a little while, but you know, they would sell right in time, you know.
So I know you picked up some rentals too. So when did you start doing the rentals? Did you just kind of start picking them up and helping with your cash flow, or what made your decision to kind of leave or kind of do a parallel route down there too?
Robert Kiyosaki, you know, take that active income and dump it into asset. So that, I mean, that was like drilled into my mind. I read every book Robert Kiyosaki fucking wrote. So
yeah.
I was like, that's what I want to do, you know, build this passive income, build this wealth machine. I don't have a 401k. I don't have a fucking job. You know, this is just, I don't know. That's how my brain worked at the time. So the first few profits that I got, you know, I dumped that money back in with my same partner. We ended up building those three duplexes. And then I bought the one behind us and built a 5-unit commercial. And then I ended up buying like 3 more single families. So all that time took about a year and a half, 2 years, maybe 2.5 years, maybe. So I had my partner maybe for 2.5 years. And then we kind of just, I feel like even though I was putting the money up, he was doing the majority of the work, but I didn't know anything, you know?
Yeah.
And so I felt like maybe I was doing my part, but maybe he felt like he was doing all the work. Right. You know, and also I have like grand ambitions. Like I want to be super, super rich, super wealthy. He doesn't really want that. So we're just different stages in our life. You know, he didn't spend 7 years in prison. I mean, he's not trying to catch up. And so anyway,
sure.
So after that, we had to talk. I was like, man, you know, these profits are looking good. Like this is the most money I've made legally in my entire life. Like, I don't understand why we don't double down. Why are we building, you know, 3 homes? Let's build 30 homes. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? No, I'll figure out the financing and all that part, or raise the money somehow, some way. And he just wasn't really into it, you know? So at that point, I kind of just went off on my own, because now the banks will lend to me, right? I got a bunch of closed projects. They've seen me working all the time. You know, I'm there when they do their inspections. You know, I know all the names. I know everybody. I got all the contact lists. I got all the spreadsheets of, you know, basically the spreadsheet tells you the timeline of, you know, when the workers need to go. I got everybody's numbers. So I would say I just felt comfortable at that time. So I went ahead and bought a home. It was actually the home we're in now. And I built it for myself. So I was like, all right, let me try this on my own. Okay. And let me build a house for myself. So that's what I did. And then in the meantime, while this was up for construction, I bought a few more in the area. I ended up building like 6 on this street, actually. But yeah, that was kind of how we went our separate ways. And then that's when I went off on my own. And then
yeah,
I ended up getting partners and investors and stuff like that.
So how are you sourcing these days? So I know you do, like you said, you had 40 in the pipeline. How do you have people bring you lots? Do you have a way to go out and find your deals? Like, how are you sourcing that initial lot that you're either going to scrape or you're going to do some sort of infill work on?
Yeah. When I got out of prison, I was a workaholic. Like I would stay up and just research, run numbers. And then, I started meeting realtors and wholesalers, and they would just start, you know, sending me stuff. I would underwrite them. And then after a while, I met one really good realtor that sent me a lot of good stuff. I ended up buying a bunch from him, actually. And then that's how the majority of those started.
Got it.
Wholesalers, but mainly from this one realtor that was just knew the neighborhoods and just super good.
Yeah. Nice. So I see, where's your home now? Where's that area?
Lovefield Airport.
Lovefield. Okay. But north of there, you're like north of
Wood and University.
Yeah. So that's, you're near Bluffield. I saw you did one in Bluffield. So you've kind of found some of these other areas, right? So we're, one of the biggest challenges I've experienced and just seeing when you go into a new area, you know, are you kind of following the footsteps of somebody else that's already done it? And then you're comping off of that? Or like what's been one of your biggest challenges as you're trying to scale this thing and grow it? And you know, what's been some of your biggest learning lessons that you've had building, you know, now you're building 2 million plus specs, you know, and things like that. I mean, obviously you're playing in a pretty risky playground, right? In that sense.
Yeah.
You know, so where have you stubbed your toe?
A lot. I stubbed my toe all.
Well, what stung the worst, I guess, as far as.
Good thing is I never lost any money on a build. So, you know, there's plenty of margins in there to where you can, I wouldn't say do a shitty job, but you know, my homes are pretty nice homes. I don't know if you've ever been in them, but they're really nice homes. I think loading up so many homes at once and not having superintendents, project managers, and bookkeeping has been a fucking pain in the ass. When you have, you know, $800,000 Amex bills, you know, somebody's got to go through that and figure out what projects those go to. So those type of things, I didn't have the foundation laid before. I was just like, let's go, you know, and obviously I made it happen. Sometimes I would stay up till 4:30 in the morning going through all the expenses, you know, putting them on the correct expense sheet or the Excel sheets. But if I had to redo it and do it over again, definitely hire project managers or superintendents to take care of that. And definitely hire in-house or an accounting firm to handle all that accounting. It's a lot.
So. Yeah.
So do you think you're going to move towards that or?
So yeah, my future plans right now, I'm building my cheapest home's 1.3 million and my most expensive 3.2 million. So here moving forward right now, I'm looking for land around 1.5 to 2 million. So that'll put me above 5 million plus homes. So that's where I'm going now, 5 million plus homes. And yeah, project managers.
I was about to say, from an infrastructure, do you like, as you're moving forward, are you kind of not pausing, but are you saying, okay, this is how I want to move forward? And you're putting a few project people in place or bookkeeping, yeah, or like, have you started that process now?
So right now I'm just still finishing up these homes. Like I said, we've got two or three more weeks left. And then again, I just handed over all my rental houses over to a property manager. So that's off my plate also. So slowly but surely, I'm getting back to ground zero, and then I'll scale back up 5 million plus with superintendents and probably accounting firm in place to where I don't have to handle all that.
So you said you have approximately 90 rentals now. Is that still what you've got in your portfolio?
Yep, still got them.
Okay. Where were you finding those? What did that look like? I mean, when you were picking those off, what was your formula?
I was paying cash back then. I would take the profits and I remember my first one, I paid $88,000. It was south of Fair Park in South Dallas. Most of all my homes are in South Dallas. I had a strategy. So as I was building my first duplexes, I'm buying the houses or the land from owners that bought it for like 30 to 40 grand at one time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, fuck, I'm paying you 200, 220 for this land and you bought it for 30 grand, you know,
mm-hmm.
Like, where can I do that right now in Dallas, Texas? So I'm looking for like the cheapest land ever. Well, and it's in South Dallas. So I was like, let me take my profits, buy rental homes in South Dallas. And if South Dallas ever becomes what East Dallas did, it's going to be worth a lot more money, you know, and if it does become buildable, I'm a builder, so I'll just scrape it, build, and make even more money. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of my strategy. Plus, I feel like Fair Park, you know, the Cotton Bowl is kind of shitty. And I feel like that's going to be the next revitalization area for the city. It's the closest to downtown. You know, they could put an arena over there, and that land over there would skyrocket.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So when they just said they're moving the Mavs to Irving, I got pissed, but I thought that was fine.
They haven't done it yet. They are going to put some money into Fair Park, though. I heard that the other day. They've got some money.
There's a lot of different revitalization things they're doing over there. They're already widening streets and adding parks and walkways and stuff. So you're seeing it slow.
90 rentals, low end like that. Obviously, that's come with some headaches as far as managing tenants and that price point.
I got all of them. New plumbing, new electrical. I mean, I buy them dilapidated. So.
Yeah. I know that area pretty well. How'd you manage doing the projects and not getting copper stolen, not getting AC units stolen?
They just stole my condensers.
I got to pay
on all the condensers. They're steadily stealing shit constantly. Yeah. Now they're getting brave. They'll steal your front door. They'll steal windows. They weren't doing that 3 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, they still fucking everything. The copper wire worse. It's like, come on. It's like 20 bucks. I mean, it cost me like $1,000.
Yeah. They're not making anything when they go scrap it, but you know, it's going to cost you a hell of a lot more. We had a couple, I was involved in Bonton, and we had a couple projects down there that we picked up nonprofit that we were involved in. And the Bonton Farms organization, there started a little over 10 years ago, but, we'd pick up housing in there that, you know, had been stripped. You know, these were Habitat for Humanity homes that were built and managed, and, you know, they would get sideways and get foreclosed. And then as soon as that had an option, they're all barred up, you know, they all had bars, but they'd bust in the door and go in there and strip all the copper out of it. So, you know, it makes it.
And I was locked with a lot of people. I was locked up with a lot of people, and they would say they got locked up for stealing copper. And I never knew what they were talking about. Stealing copper. Yeah. Like, now I know, you fucking assholes.
I had it stolen. Was it last year or a year and a half ago? I had it stolen out of my commercial building, and I was in the middle of renovating it, and that sucked. I mean, that was now. Fortunately, they didn't go in and steal all the 110 stuff. You know, they just stole the main lines that ran through the conduit up to the individual panels, and you know, and went in there and stripped it out. And I was in Hawaii at the time. And so I came back and I'm like looking at the cameras. I'm like, why is that back door open? And sent my guy over there and he's like, oh man, I got bad news. Like, oh shit.
Well, that night we had dinner with Clyde over there. That same day, he had all of his appliances stolen out of one of his houses. He was supposed to, he had just put it on the market, and the agent called and said, hey, when are y'all putting in appliances?
That happens.
All his appliances were gone. So,
yeah, I was talking to Jason Castro the other day too, and he told me the same thing. You know, they stole appliances and, you know, some other stuff. And that was in the Canny Creek house too, you know? So it's like,
yeah, it doesn't matter.
You're not really safe anywhere, man. It's like, it sucks.
That house on the M streets, they just stole two condensers off of it like last week.
Wow.
And that's big. Those are the big ones.
Yeah. Are you fencing your new stuff in and locking it up, you know, putting gates and all that stuff around it? I mean, it helps deter a little bit. Doesn't mean it's going to be foolproof.
I got them cut the locks and still whole pallets of decking.
Yeah. Jeez.
But yeah, I do. I look at the neighborhood and then I look at how visible the home is off of main roads. If it's close to main roads, I'll put, you know, security fences up.
Right, right.
If not, and it's a little tucked off, you know, then I might leave it and just try to lock it down when I can.
Yeah.
Cool. I mean, they usually don't mess with me on the new construction stuff. They don't really steal wires and stuff like that. They don't steal cabinets, but usually it's lumber, decking, that type of stuff.
Easy to carry out.
Stuff they can go water trade or use on another job or,
Well, let's kind of shift a little bit, unless you have any other questions about construction. But I want to, Eric, I know you've put a lot of effort into social media and your personal brand is doing awesome. You've got a mastermind that you've been working on. So I definitely want you to touch on that and then talk about what your big goals are. I know Ryan Diaz came to your first mastermind. He was telling me that y'all are looking at doing some really big spec stuff. So, you know, talk about the mastermind. Talk about what's next for you guys.
Yeah, we got a mastermind this Saturday, March 30th. Got 4 tickets left. Anybody wants to come? I don't know when this thing airs, but
I'll at least put out the reel for you. I'll put out some promo for you.
Yeah. March 30th. So, like I said, we're looking to build 5 million plus homes. Not 40 of them. I'll probably stick to 8 homes a year. And then I want to get into commercial development. Really, I'm kind of drawn towards flex space right now. I don't know. We'll see how that goes. Or large residential developments, you know, sell lots or even build some of them, sell some of them.
So let me ask you this, Eric. And you said that before, and I meant to ask you, where's the mindset shift into stepping into that territory, into the, you know, 5 million plus range? I know in that ball game, you're playing with a lot different clientele. A lot of them have cash. A lot of them are, you know, a lot of them are big guys in either sports industries or things like that. I've got a friend of mine that's built, Luca's in one of his houses, and Jason Kidd's in another one of his houses that he built. But same thing. I mean, he builds, you know, he was building four million plus, you know, spec homes exactly the way he wanted them, and, you know, put those out there in Preston Hollow, you know, and he didn't want the headaches, you know. So going back to that, like, what's transitioned you from these, you know, million to $2 million builds and now saying, okay, I want to build less, I'm going to build better quality or bigger properties and higher price points. And then also going into, you know, your mindset now shifting into commercial and things like that.
So, I mean, the homes I built are already pretty big. I mean, I built 6,400 square feet, 6,000 square feet, you know, 5,800 square feet. So I've already built some big homes. I've already sold to professional athletes. I mean, I've already dealt with all that. It's just, and also I just want to keep sort of the gross revenue the same, which obviously the profit margins will be the same also. Because to build a $50,000 home or $150,000 home in South Dallas and to build a, you know, $5 million home is all the same steps, basically. Mm-hmm. So you're just dealing with a lot bigger profit margins. Of course, there's going to be issues with anything. Like we talked about, South Dallas, you're going to deal with copper wiring. Well, I think I'd rather deal with the athlete issues than the copper wiring issues.
Yeah,
but yeah, sure. You've got to pick your poison, I think. Any industry, you're going to have issues. And even these homes that I'm building now, you know, they were awesome. I used to love them, but I've just kind of got burnt out on them. And I just want to get back my passion. And now I'm attracted to the big homes, you know, the $5 to $10 million homes. So plus I want to build my own.
Is that, is that partially related to interest rates as well? I mean, just are you changing that up just because?
No, not because of that. I think I'm just evolving and growing and wanting to build bigger homes. It's kind of where I'm growing towards. And commercial also has always been on the table. I've always wanted to get into commercial. And that was the whole point when I got out of prison. And the reason I got into flipping was to learn all the costs. So now I just got stuck on this hamster wheel of building. But I mean, it was great money. I make great money, you know. Yeah. Obviously, I got a $2 million house. I got exotic cars. I got everything I want.
Yeah.
I mean, so
it's a good hamster wheel. Yeah, to be. If you're going to get stuck on a hamster wheel, that's a good one.
It's, I was passionate about it for a long time. I'm still passionate about building. I like building. Now I just want to build the bigger homes and with a correct foundation. And also, with the bigger homes will allow you to hire, you know, more people to build that foundation. So, you know, we could hire an in-house designer or a designer for that home, and those people will speak directly to them. So I can kind of shield myself, or I can hire, you know, a liaison in the company that handles the customer service aspect after the sale. Or during, you know, the realtor obviously will handle it during, but
are you doing any build to suit stuff, or is it all spec and then you're just doing
only when I pre-sell, which I hate.
Yeah.
Sell's a sell, you know.
And no, I understand. So like when you don't have the lot built up yet, you got your sign out there and somebody comes along and says, you know, I want you to build, and then you go ahead and take that down and go through it from that consumer base.
I just finished two of them. So
what was your timelines on those compared to your specs?
They're roughly the same. They might extend it by a month or two, but it's nothing crazy. My biggest problem is I have so many and I'm only one man, you know, just juggling a lot of it also. And like you say, you got to turn all this money before you can get the draws. And so it's a delicate balance when you have as many homes as I do.
Yeah. 40 homes going. I literally can't even imagine. I mean, that's a huge undertaking.
It was wild.
So have you had any that have really stumped you, or you've had to keep longer than you wanted and, you know, had to drop the margins way down just to get rid of it? And what did you learn from that?
Yeah, the ones I built out in Southlake were really big homes. And it was just a farther drive for me because, you know, I built a lot around my same neighborhood, so these are easy to get to and top of mind. And then out there, I got to schedule shit and I got to go drive out there. So those took a long time to build. So my carry costs were pretty high. And then they were on the market, and those were big homes with big loans, some of my biggest ones. So those mortgage payments monthly, you know, once the funds are fully drawn, it's like, fuck. So I ended up dropping that and sold to a cash buyer, which I still made a couple hundred grand on each, but I was projected to make like 800. Mm-hmm. So that kind of hurt.
Gotcha.
But it's not always about the profits for me. You know, like I said, this is my career and I needed to learn. So I still feel like I'm learning all the time, but now I feel like I'm comfortable. Like, you know, I have the expertise, I have the portfolio, I can show you all the numbers. I have everything any investor wants. You know, I can show people how to do this now. And that was another thing with the master classes and the masterminds. I got so many people asking me, hey, what do you do? How'd you do it? Damn, you were just in prison, man. Well, this is awesome. How do you do it? So I was just like, fuck it. Let me just host a master class and teach y'all, you know? And that's how that got started.
Man, I appreciate you spending the time with us. I mean, I'm sure you've dived a ton into details that you get into your class. And so opening up about some of that stuff to us is really, really, really generous of you. I know you've got a couple tattoo shops. I don't know. I don't see a whole lot of your Instagram about that. You want to plug your tattoo shops? You were telling me about them. You have a different brand for your tattoo shops.
Yeah. So that goes back to the Robert Kiyosaki books, you know, invest in businesses, invest in cash flowing real estate. So some of those first profits that I was making, I was getting tattoos already, you know, and I noticed something in my partner. She had like a line of like 6 to 9 months booked out. And I just dropped a seed in her ears like, hey, did you ever think about opening your own tattoo shop? She was like, no, I can't do that. And then sure enough, like 4 or 5 months later, she calls me and is like, hey, were you serious about opening a tattoo shop? I think I just held a house at that time and I had some money. And I was like, yeah, I was. And
There you go. Because it's called Lilac. Yeah,
It's called Lilac Tattoo Studios. It's an all-female tattoo shop. I wanted to bring something different. I didn't want it to be a grungy tattoo shop where you walk in and, you know, people are intimidated. This guy's fully tattooed, head tattoos, all his face. I wanted to bring like more of a salon vibe to where you walk in, it's clean and pretty, and, you know, girls could feel comfortable going in there, you know, the 18th birthday and getting a little, you know, tattoo or signature or script or whatever it is. So that was kind of the idea behind it. And yeah, I opened that first one up in Dallas, 2020, I want to say. And, you know, it was going good. And then we had somebody come in and do a TikTok of it. And the TikTok went viral.
Oh, wow.
And there was a line around the corner basically every day since that TikTok. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's special. Awesome.
Sometimes we have specials on, you know, once a month or St. Patty's or Easter or whatever it is. And the line, people will line up at like 6 a.m. and just wait until we open. And the line's around.
That's awesome.
It's pretty wild.
That's cool, man. Yeah. Well, good deal, Eric. Well, man, I really appreciate all the words of wisdom, the books that you mentioned, your path. You've had a crazy path to here. But you know, the idea that you took action, I've told the story before. I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad when I was a sophomore in college, and it took me 20 years. Almost 20 years to flip my first house after that. So, you know, we took in the same knowledge. Sometimes it just takes a while. But once you get going, you kind of get that self-belief. You start putting another foot in, okay, do it again. And then you get that momentum going. So it really is inspiring to hear how you got to here and, you know, all the steps you're taking to build your business. And now you're expanding out. So I really, really appreciate the time today.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, man.
Thank you all for having me.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll link all your stuff on Instagram. Well, you know, your Instagram. I don't know if you have anything on YouTube, anything you got, send it to me. I'm Ashton Hines, the Dallas Real Estate Guy, Tavis Westbrook, Travis without the R on Instagram and Facebook. He's got Tavis Westbrook Designs, and you can find us there. And we have our new YouTube channel that's all the way up with all of our podcasts on there. We will link that as well. And that is today's show. Until next time, we appreciate your time.